Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
An anti-vaccine backlash becomes a factor in Florida's immunization policies.
We would be able to ascertain quickly, to a large extent, hopefully there won't be a lot of people opting out, who would need to be quarantined.
Also tonight, Florida's suicide rate is running ahead of the national rate, and state policymakers are struggling to respond.
We do have higher rates of suicide. And nationally, suicide is the 10th leading cause of death.
We'll also chat with an advocate for more fossil fuel exploration and production, even off the Florida coast, and we'll convene the Capitol Report Reporters Roundtable for a look at the many ways lawmakers are considering to change the way the Florida Constitution can be changed. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's the end of week four, the halfway point in the 2019 Florida lawmaking session, and this is Capitol Report. A measure moving through Florida's House and Senate looks to add student immunization records to the Department of Health's existing database. Ryan Daly reports amendments to the bill would let parents opt out of being listed on the registry, but critics are still skeptical on whether their privacy is protected.
Under the bill, certain school staff would have access to the Department of Health's vaccination database. The House bill's sponsor, Republican Representative Ralph Masullo, says that's in the interest of verifying students are compliant with state vaccination requirements.
House Bill number 213, Immunization Registry, requires all medical personnel who administer vaccines to K through 12 college or university students to enter the information into the existing and secure HIPAA-compliant registry run by the Department of Health, currently called Florida Shots.
The way the bill was originally written, if parents opted out of the registry, their election to do so would be noted in the database. An amendment adopted in both versions of the measure changes that. Even if parents do get their child vaccinated, they can opt out as well. And as Representative Carrie Pigman explains, schools must still keep record of student shots.
The school would have a paper copy of your status, whether you're a deferred or and chose not to participate in the database, or whether your child received immunization but you don't want to have it reported on the database. So that the school is required to have documentation.
Masullo, who is a practicing physician, says it's not just about keeping detailed records. The registry would pinpoint who should be quarantined should an outbreak occur.
It is actually two things. It's a convenience and efficiency bill. It's also a mechanism by which, if there was an outbreak of any communicable or contagious disease in our state, that we would be able to ascertain quickly, to a large extent, hopefully there won't be a lot of people opting out, who would need to be quarantined.
This forced inclusion and data retention in the current system is unconstitutional. And this bill expands the registry's intrusive reach even further.
Mackenzie Fraser is co-founder of Health Freedom Florida, a group that advocates for vaccine choice. She says in her opinion, there is only one solution to giving parents an option concerning inclusion in the database.
The only way to actually solve this problem is to start asking for permission, an opt-in system with full informed consent. One simple line on all healthcare forms. Would you like your child's medical records in the Florida Shots database, yes or no?
Tanya Warfield of New Smyrna Beach was one of those who spoke against the Senate's version of the bill. She invoked the state constitution's provisions regarding privacy.
This goes against Section 23 in the Florida Constitution, where every natural person has the right to be let alone and free from government intrusion into the person's private life, except as otherwise provided herein.
Like Fraser, Warfield urged lawyers to make the registry an opt-in rather than an opt-out basis. Other critics call the registry a tracking system and raise questions about facing potential discrimination as a result. Democratic Representative Nicholas Duran, however, says he doesn't feel privacy is violated, thanks largely to the bill's amendment.
I don't see this as a patient privacy issue because of the work you have put into allowing the bill to respect those who do not want to be in this system, will remain out of this system. You have done that. I think this is a public health issue.
The bill's House version cleared its final committee stop Thursday, and in the Senate is set for its final stop in the Rules Committee. I'm Ryan Daly.
Mental health has been a frequent topic at the Capitol following more tragic news from Parkland. Two students who survived last year's Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School massacre took their own lives over the past 2 weeks. The Tampa Bay Times Miami Herald Bureau reports that while the legislature allocated $69 million for student mental health after the tragedy, almost none of it went to suicide prevention. But as Margie Menzel reports, some lawmakers have begun to study prevention programs.
Ray Rodriguez, the Estero Republican who chairs the House Health and Human Services Committee, is troubled by a recent report of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control. In mid-February, as his panel heard a presentation on suicide, he pointed to data showing Americans' life expectancy had dropped for the third year in a row.
It's the first time we've seen that in this country since 1915 through 1918, which during that period we were dealing with a world war and a great influenza epidemic that accounted for the decline in life expectancy in this country.
The CDC also found suicide was a factor in the more recent decline.
If you look back to 1999, we've seen a major increase in suicides.
Uta Gaziok, director of substance abuse and mental health for the Department of Children and Families, told the panel nearly 3,200 Floridians lost their lives to suicide in 2017.
That is an increase of 65 individuals from 2016. In the state of Florida, suicide is the eighth leading cause of death. And compared nationally, we do have higher rates of suicide. And nationally, suicide is the 10th leading cause of death.
To prevent suicide, she says, it's crucial to identify the populations with the highest rates. The age group in Florida with the highest suicide rate is 85 years and older, followed by the 55 to 64-year-old age group. When it comes to services for veterans, a group at particular risk for suicide, Gaziok says DCF is focusing on peer counseling, vet-to-vet services, and on funding such programs.
They'll be subcontracting with 211 facilities in other areas to actually have veteran peers to provide care coordination and a specific line that veterans can call for help and actually speak to another veteran.
St. John's Republican Representative Cindy Stevenson says she was shocked to learn that white males take their own lives at the highest rate by gender and race. Black females have the lowest suicide rate.
I was totally stunned, and most of the people I've talked to have been stunned, was white male non-veterans, and that was the case in my community. So I've heard a lot about the veterans, but I think it's an invisible epidemic in the other population as well. So I wanted, if there's any help you can give me in my own community or if we can address that in some way. I think it's an awareness issue.
Kim Gregg-Lewitz of the University of Central Florida conducts research on suicide prevention. She says most state prevention efforts involve training adult gatekeepers to identify suicide warning signs and to respond. Florida has trained more than 16,000 adults as gatekeepers and 1,700 high school and college peer gatekeepers. But Gregg-Lewitz says the state faces limited buy-in from agencies and schools and a lack of input from people actually using the services.
We're also seeing that funding to scale up these programs is lacking. All of the projects that we've been implemented in the state thus far are more or less pilot projects. And once the federal dollars are gone, there's a limited amount of funding to scale up the programs to make it more widespread across agencies and communities.
Rodriguez says lawmakers will be guided by policy and research in improving Florida's prevention efforts. I'm Margie Menzel.
Still to come on Capitol Report, the Florida legislature is working to restrict the ways in which the state's constitution can be changed. Part of the reason, concern over out-of-state influence.
Lawmakers are saying, well, hey, we're concerned about what happened during the presidential election. We think maybe some foreign entities had an impact on the outcome of that election.
And despite state and local opposition to offshore oil drilling, advocates of it say they're not deterred.
And as Floridians, we especially know, we all remember the space shuttle disaster. But, you know, we didn't as a nation quit.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
The end of week five on Capitol Report. All kinds of hot topics now starting to surface at the Florida Capitol as we are halfway through the process and the urgency begins to build in the Capitol. Not today. They all went home for the weekend, but that's okay. One of the things that they're really working on, though, are changes to not just the Florida Constitution when it comes to line items, but the overall process. So we have Regan McCarthy and Sean Mulcahy here with us to give us some more insight into exactly what's going on, Regan.
Yeah, Tom. So lawmakers are considering four different bills that would change the process for how the Florida Constitution is changed. Right now, there are a lot of different methods for amendments to be passed to the Constitution. One is through joint resolution. That's where two-thirds of the Florida Senate and the Florida House agree on a change to the state constitution, and then they send that to the voters in referendum. Another is through citizen initiative. So that involves gathering a number of signatures and getting an item onto the ballot in that way. And the other way is through the Constitution Revision Commission, which is a body that meets once every 20 years, and it can put amendments directly onto the ballot for voters to then decide about. And just this last year, in November, the Constitution Revision Commission put a number of amendments on the ballot, and I think that's really what has raised some concern about the process and about whether we like the ways that our state constitution can be amended.
Because the combination of items that came out of the Constitution Revision Commission on some of their proposals, such as a ban on vaping and also a ban on fracking in the same piece, just seemed like, why?
Yeah. And so I think that's raised a lot of concern, and lawmakers are working now to address that issue in particular. There are four different bills moving through the session now that would make changes to the state constitution. But I know that issue you were talking about, Tom, they call it bundling, is something that lawmakers are working to address now.
Okay, Sean, what specifically are they trying to do to rectify these perceived problems?
There are actually a bunch of the four different ways are kind of, some of them go against each other. There's one that's a single subject requirement for the Constitution Revision Commission. So that would mean we no longer would see bundling. They would be limited to one subject per amendment instead of bundling them together. But then the other one is just completely repealing the Constitution Revision Commission. So both of those are in their way through the House and through the Senate and are looking like they have chances of passing. Another one would raise the threshold for what voters would need to get. Currently, it's at 60%. It would raise it to 66 2/3% to make it a little bit harder for the amendments to pass. And then the final one just completely changes the way that amendments are proposed. And this is a late session pop-up here. It just is getting traction this week. And what it does, a lot sweeping changes. The petition gatherers would have to be based in Florida, whereas currently they don't have to be, and so that would be a different change.
I think with that bill, that's one of the biggest changes there, and that's causing a lot of concern for people who maybe are interested in putting citizen initiatives forward. So that bill that you're talking about is specifically related to citizens initiatives. That usually if a person, any person, wants to make a change to the Florida Constitution, then they just have to gather petitions, get enough signatures that they qualify for getting on the ballot, and then, you know, go through the normal process, make sure their ballot language is approved. But this really puts some roadblocks in the way for just anyone to make that change. Lawmakers are saying, well, hey, we're concerned about what happened during the presidential election. We think maybe some foreign entities had an impact on the outcome of that election. We don't want just open, whatever, anybody can make changes to our state constitution. So if you want to gather petitions for a citizens initiative, you have to be a Florida resident and you have to register with the Department of State, the Florida Department of State. Now, a lot of citizens initiatives maybe do come from Floridians, but then those Floridians work with outside firms who maybe aren't really here in Florida to do all of that work of gathering those petitions. And so people are concerned that that limits the ability for an ordinary person to actually be able to do that then. It's a lot to just ask only Floridians to be doing that job. And they also say that it threatens a person's right to free speech, that gathering petitions is a form of speech, and that requiring somebody to register before they can make that speech is a constitutional violation.
And the strange irony is that even though a lot of these restrictions are aimed at such things as the Constitution Revision Commission and Citizens Initiative ways of getting material into the state's foundational document, most of the proposed constitutional amendments come from, guess who? The Florida legislature.
Yeah. And the Florida legislature would be impacted. Their joint resolutions they put through would be impacted by that bill that Sean was talking about that would raise the threshold for getting an amendment onto the Constitution. So right now, after all those amendments get on the ballot, it goes to voters and the voters get to decide, do we like this amendment? Do we not? And as Sean said, that would increase the threshold to
66 2/3%. And I think that's exactly what the Florida legislature is trying to do. We saw this amendment fever, last election where we had 12 amendments on the ballot. 11 of them were passed into the Constitution. So I think the lawmakers are actually really trying to scale that back, which is a concern for a lot of Florida citizens who don't like what the legislature is doing, the Republican-controlled legislature. For people who don't agree with that, citizens' initiatives have been their way of getting around that. And I think that's what the lawmakers are trying to curb.
Yeah, mainly because in Florida, unlike places like California, citizens have no way to change state statute. They got to go for the Constitution because there's nothing else they can change.
Right. And you'll hear lawmakers talk about that. They say, hey, the Constitution is a place where we want a framework of how our government operates. It's not a place for policy. And so we'd like to limit this to just this framework and keep this policy out, which is they see a lot of these citizens' initiatives as policy. And they're even saying some of these amendments put forward by the Constitution Revision Commission were policy.
4 weeks to go, guys. We'll see where all this goes. Regan McCarthy and Sean Mulcahy. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Tom.
Lawmakers are off for the weekend, and Gina Jordan gives us some insights on what might happen when they reconvene.
Looking ahead to next week's committee plans, a proposal would repeal the Florida Motor Vehicle No-Fault Law, which requires drivers to maintain $10,000 in personal injury protection coverage. The bill makes changes to financial responsibility requirements for damage liability starting next January. A law against the financial exploitation of vulnerable adults and the elderly may be expanded. Financial securities dealers and investment advisors would be added to the list of those who must report abuse or exploitation to a state hotline. And those investment professionals would be able to place a temporary hold on questionable financial transactions. Statutes may be amended to eliminate the requirement that a new freestanding hospital obtain a certificate of need before being licensed, and newly licensed hospitals must participate in the Medicaid program and provide charity care or equivalent donations to a state health care trust fund. Courts may be required to appoint a guardian for someone who's being involuntarily admitted for mental health services. And a bill named Jordan's Law would require standards for judges to follow in child dependency cases. The Department of Children and Families would have to notify local law enforcement agencies about child protective investigations and workers would have to be trained to recognize and handle head trauma and brain injury in children. That's some of what's coming up in the Florida legislature. I'm Gina Jordan.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, last year, President Donald Trump announced he would open more of the Gulf of Mexico and the Atlantic to offshore oil and gas exploration. Florida responded by seeking a waiver from the policy. Voters responded, too, by passing a ban on offshore drilling in state waters. Yet advocates for offshore drilling, along with the group Explore Offshore, remain undeterred. Lynn Hatter spoke with former VA Secretary Jim Nicholson and the Florida Petroleum Council's David Mica about the nation's energy future and why they believe offshore drilling should be on the table.
When the president last year announced that he was opening up some of those Gulf waters and more of the Atlantic waters to oil and gas exploration, it sort of caused an outcry here in Florida with people saying, oh God, oh no, please don't do that. And I'm wondering why you all see that decision as a positive thing when it initially received so much backlash here in the state.
We do see that as a positive decision on the part of the chief executive because of its long-term strategic importance to both the energy security for our country and the national and economic security for our country. We also understand some of the negative reactions to that. There was a horrific incident that occurred about 10 years ago, and people are well aware of that. And that has to be acknowledged and then discussed in today's context of greatly advanced technology in that work and getting people to recognize, one, that we can't as a country just sit here with our arms tied behind our backs and not go out and quantify what we have out there to put into our long-term plans when our neighbors like Mexico, near neighbors like Cuba, and adversaries like China are very aggressively developing their offshore oil and gas assets. So why should the United States just sit there idle while this goes on? 94% of the coastline of the United States of America is off limits today to any exploration work. There's been no seismic testing done in these areas for over 30 years. And so we are trying to get our fellow citizens to ask themselves, does this make sense? Is this so environmentally sensitive that we shouldn't be quantifying what we have out there as a country to put into our long-term plan? And the answer, of course, is that it's not. It can be done without any environmental degradation, doing, the seismic testing and quantification.
Well, let me ask you this question. Do we have any sort of idea of what lies in the Gulf along Florida, Georgia, Alabama, or actually Florida, Louisiana, Alabama, and what may lie to the east off the coast of Florida?
Well, that's a really good question. And the honest answer is that we don't know for sure, but there are people who do make projections based on what we do know about what's going on, in the western part of the Gulf, and so forth, and that is that the holdings are enormous. I mean, there's the number that it's used in the vicinity of 90 billion barrels of oil, trillions of cubic feet of natural gas, But those are estimates. No one knows for sure.
So in order to figure that out, we have to go out there.
Exactly. Right.
And one of the first steps, Lynn, is using that seismic imaging that was mentioned. It's important to do that. It's like doing an MRI of the Earth's crust, which gives us the ability to make those estimates better. But beyond that, it also tells us where we don't want to go. So it's it works on both ends as far as efficiency, so we can reduce our footprint and maximize our efficiencies with the quest to find the next generation of oil and gas that may be out there.
Thank you, Mr. Micah. You guys mentioned earlier this issue of the 2010 Deepwater Horizon oil spill. In the run-up to that, our state leaders were much more open to the potential of exploring offshore drilling. That single event sort of shut that process down. And now here we are 10 years later, as you mentioned, Mr. Micah, the state of Florida, Floridians recently passed a constitutional amendment banning offshore oil drilling in state waters. How do you persuade them, people who lived through that BP oil spill, that this is something that they should consider?
Yeah, it's critical that, if you will, you get back on that horse. You know, we as a nation are pretty resilient people. And as Floridians, we especially know, we all remember the space shuttle disaster. But, you know, we didn't as a nation quit. We looked at our ingenuity and our best minds and scientists and said, we've got to find a way forward. And similar to that, we as an industry have to do the same thing. We have to look forward, finding the best engineering and technology, test that, create the redundancies and new technology development to make sure that we can do this safely. And we have created the Center for Offshore Safety, and we have more than 100 new protocols and changes in the last 10 years that have greatly changed the face of the industry in what we do to get to a point that we now are at the safest level that we've been in the history of man. And that's very, very significant. You know, when we think back to that, we think about where we were a decade ago. And if you think about the model of the phone that you were using and just the technology that was in there, and then compare that to what we have today, it's a huge gap in change in technology. And we have been doing the same thing with regards to energy development in the offshore area and onshore as well.
That was Lynn Hatter speaking with former U.S. Secretary of Veterans Affairs Jim Nicholson and Florida Petroleum Council head David Micah over the issue of offshore oil and natural gas exploration. Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaise Ganey, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, and Sean Mulcahy. Thanks also to Margie Menzel. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Be sure to join us again every weeknight throughout the Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag.